You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to another great edition of the Eagle. Of the Eagle Sports Zone. And as per usual, I am your host, Handy. I'll be with you until 8 p.m. this evening on this, warm Sunday evening. Winter seems to be leaving us here in the capital. And so wherever you're tuning in from, welcome. Welcome to another great edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. Today on the Eagle Sports Zone, we will be discussing, we're going to try and look for the intersection between, you know, what we call Pan-Africanism and sport. Do the two belong in the same room? Do they belong in the same sentence? Is there a link between the two? Can one help? Can one's agenda help the other's agenda? What kind of relationship is this? Is there even a relationship between the two? That's what we'll be discussing here in the Eagle Sports Zone. But of course, as usual, we'll first run through some local and continental sporting news. But before we get into that, make sure you're following us on all of our social media pages. That's Facebook, that's Instagram, that's X, that's LinkedIn, that's WhatsApp, that's YouTube, Eagle FM Namibia on all pages. And if you happened to have missed a previous broadcast of the Eagle Sports Zone, then fear not, you can simply go to the Eagle FM website or download the mobile application. That's free to download on the Google Play Store as well as on the Apple App Store. And once you've downloaded it, or once you've accessed our website, which is www.eaglefm.com.na, you can head to the podcast section and you will be able to find any show that's aired previously on Eagle FM, not just the Eagle Sports Zone. So we're talking about the home run. We're talking about Unpacking the Day. We're talking about Omo Eli. We're talking about Pulling Heartstrings. We're talking about Kutha Mosha. So if there's any show that you'd like to tune into once again, you know, maybe there's one show you want to relive, or maybe you just missed it for whatever reason, then simply go to the podcast section and you will be able to listen to it for free at your own time, at your own pace. And if you'd like to be following us on WhatsApp, on our WhatsApp channel, that is, all you have to do is message the following number. That's 081-241-44. That's 081-241-44. And you will receive the link to the channel if you message that number. Make sure to save that number as a contact as well. And that is also the number you can save as a contact if you want to receive the Villager newspaper directly to your mobile device every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. So if you want to catch tomorrow's edition, make sure you're tapped in there. And also send them your email address so you can get it in your inbox. Again, for a total of $0 and 0 Namibian cents. Now, let's get into some local sporting news. As always, the number in the studio is 0832-888-401. That's 0832-888-401. One, we will begin with some local rugby news. That is the Namibian Rugby Union. Their Premier League season continued this weekend with match day 10 and 11. 10 for some team, match day 11 for others, taking place. And in perhaps not a shock to anyone, but Wanderers beat UNAM 48-24. Montego United, formerly known as Chusco United, they beat FNB Dolphins 45-30. And then kudos to Grootfontein with kudos taking that one 48-31. And then we had a Rehoboth derby with Rio Falcon taking on FNB Rehoboth, and FNB Rehoboth edging that one out with a 47-40 victory over their crosstown rivals. And so the league table in the rugby season, you have FNB Wanderers as they always are, top of the table. 11 matches played, 10-1, only one loss. They are on 57 points. Then in second place is FNB Grootfontein. Oh, they've actually played 12 matches already. With a 9-1 and a 3 lost on 51 points. Montego United, formerly known as Trusco United, they are in third place on 10 points, on 10 matches played on 48 points. And then in fourth place, you have FNB Kudus on 44 points with 7 of their 10 matches played so far, ending in a victory. And for those that don't know, the local rugby season, the top four go to the semifinals, and then obviously from there on we have the final, in which the winner of the league season is decided. You know, always interesting to have, in the sports world, there's always this argument of what is the best way to crown a champion over the course of a season. I mean, in the case of FNB Wanderers, for example, you know, can you imagine they continue their almost perfect season only to lose in the semi-final or even lose in the final after, you know, a long, hard season of being on top. So, yeah, there's the rugby team, rugby union, excuse me, seems to feel that this format is the best way to decide who crowns the champion. And it's more exciting, I would say, especially when you get to that semi-final stage. The top four teams, at least in theory, all have a chance to win the league after that once they qualify for the semi-finals. But then others say it is not a fair way to crown a league champion. It actually suits more the American style of leagues or of sporting events. They always do a playoff system similar to what we are seeing now in the Champions League as well. But nonetheless, we move on to some more local sporting news. Then we move on to cricket, where the FNB Tri-Series, which will consist of the FNB Eagles, that is the men's cricket team, Namibian cricket team, Namibian national cricket team, they will play against the Proteas, that is South Africa, and Zimbabwe. They will compete in a tournament that's meant to mark a new chapter for African cricket. These three nations are also the three nations that are going to be hosting the World Cup next year, with Namibia going to be hosting a few matches as well at the FNB Namibia Cricket Ground. We'll see if it will still be called the FNB Namibia Cricket Ground by then. As I recall, when that naming right sponsorship was announced, the expiry date was right before the World Cup, so putting Cricket Namibia in pole position to negotiate, whether it's an extension or with a different sponsor. And I am 99.999% sure it will be more lucrative than the current one is, which, whose number I don't have in front of me right now, but it was a sizable number. Moving on to the 2026 World Triathlon Development Regional Cup taking place in Kenya. It features a 750-meter swim, a 20-kilometer bike ride, and a 5-kilometer run for the triathletes. Namibia's participants did fairly well, with Yana Muchler finishing in third place in the elite women's category in a time of 1 hour, 20 minutes, and 7 seconds. And she also secured second place in the youth category. So a congratulations to Yana. Then more Namibians participating in this event. You had Maximilian Betts, who finished fourth overall in the elite men's category with a time of 1 hour and 17 seconds, earning him a silver medal in the under 23 category. And then last but not least, we had Johannes Jacob Langford, he finished 10th overall among the elite men's with a time of 1 hour, 8 minutes and 19 seconds. That also earned him a bronze medal in the youth category. Now, on the other side of this, we will wrap up with our local sporting news before we head over on to the continent. We will be right back.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone. You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone as we wrap up our local news segment before we head to our continental news segment. You know, during the week, some monumental news occurred in the footballing world, and that was with our very own Peter Shalulile, who has now officially signed for Young African Soccer Club over in Tanzania. Young Africans, who are also known as the Youngest Sports Club or Football Club. So Shalulile signed a reported 2-year deal over there. And the president, Hersi Ali Said, said that there were clubs that offered him more money than we did, but he chose our project. So the club president giving us some insight into what made Shalulile choose this team for his footballing future, more than likely his final, contract that he's going to sign as a professional, approaching his mid-30s now. But Tanzania, for those that don't know, their teams are not short of resources. It's being alleged, it's being reported that he received a $700,000 US dollar signing bonus with signing with the team. That's almost 12 million Namibian dollars, if that reported figure is said to be true, which, wouldn't be too surprising considering how much money these Tanzanian teams are making, how much their league is making, how much their league is generating. In 2021, a media company called Azam Media Limited signed a 10-year deal with the Tanzanian Premier League worth 225 billion Tanzanian shillings in amounts that make more sense to us. That is the equivalent of 1.5 billion Namibian dollars. So until 2031, between 2021 and 2031, the Tanzanian Premier League is generating over 100 million Namibian dollars per year just from their broadcast rights. I mean, we've spoken about broadcast rights on this program many, many times. We've discussed why they are such a revenue generator, why they're so important for a league to have. You know, we've written articles on it. So if you happen to miss those, why don't you go into the podcast section of the Eagle FM website or Eagle FM mobile application. Just type in broadcast rights. The past episodes we did on that should come up. And if you'd like to read an article that I wrote on this, you know, the issue of broadcast rights in the Namibian context now, you know, where we received comments from the ministry, we received comments from the NFA itself on why it doesn't look like that in Namibia. You know, how we see from South Africa, how we're seeing from Tanzania, how we see in Egypt. We delved into all of that. So that's a story for another day. But just to give you some insight into where Shalulile is going, he's basically joining the Tanzanian Sundowns. We know how Sundowns dominated the league in his time there, in major part thanks to his efforts, of course. This Yanga SC has won over 30 Tanzanian Premier Leagues, and they've won every league since 2021, the 2021-2022 season. Young African has been the champion of the Tanzanian league. So with Shalulile in the squad, I'm sure they will be hoping to continue that great form. And Shalulile can add to his illustrious trophy cabinet. And actually, now I'm thinking, perhaps I'll look it up in the next commercial break, but I want to say Shalulile is the most decorated foreign-based Namibian player. I'll confirm that in the next commercial break, but you know, we know his trophy cabinet is extensive with the amount of league titles, with the amount of domestic cups, you know, Champions Leagues that Shalulile has won in his time at Sundown. So he's making his, what I presume to be his final pit stop in his professional career over in Tanzania. And by all accounts, it sounds like he didn't just do it for the money. He's actually going there for sporting ambition reasons, to further etch his name in the folklore of African football, which we will touch on in just a moment. But before we get to that, we have some continental news to share. Quite a bit actually happened on the continent in terms of sports and in terms of sports business. But we'll begin with CAF and FIFA, this saga that's been going on with FIFA, with Infantino, the FIFA president, with his, let's just say, not popular ideas of late. You know, we've talked about what's been going on at the World Cup, some of the things that are happening behind the scenes in the World Cup. But now, post-World Cup, Mr. Infantino has landed himself in some more hot water. This is because he proposed an idea that was not well received by the wider football community. The reason I'm bringing it up is because it was actually well received by CAF and like one or two other, you know, federations and member nations. But the main players, I'm talking about UEFA, I'm talking about CONCACAF, I'm talking about CONMEBOL, they oppose this plan. So let's briefly talk about this ambitious plan that Infantino had, who, by the way, is being accused by former FIFA president, former disgraced FIFA president. Was he actually officially arrested? But we know, I'm talking about Sepp Blatter now. We've seen and we know what Sepp Blatter has done in the past, and he's come out to say that, Infantino, my friend, you are doing things that shouldn't be done with the beautiful game of football. And so, I say that to say that's kind of an indicator. If someone like Sepp Blatter can say you're not doing the right thing, then more than likely you need to change what it is that you're doing, because that's one of the most, I'm looking for a friendly way to phrase it, but that's one of the most non-by-the-book presidents probably FIFA has ever had, any sporting organization has ever had. So before we get into the story, let's see who is knocking at the door. Eagle FM, good evening.
Yes, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah, long time, eh?
What would you like to share with us today?
I think earlier on that FIFA.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I did enjoy the match. Yeah, but some way, somehow, in terms of administrative issues, I think there was also something that I was not happy with.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when the president of America was actually trying to remote control.
Yeah.
The situation there, especially on the FIFA. You remember that decision that they were given a red card?
Oh, for the American player.
Yes.
And yes. Then they overturned it.
They overturned it.
Yeah.
So how fair was that kind of a thing?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm? I do not understand. Maybe you people who know sport very well, and the rules that govern the matches and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
But I just believe, even if it could have just been remained in force, so after all, they were not even very far.
Mm.
They did not even go far. So now you embarrass the thing or you confuse matters there. And I hope that thing could have been also challenged. Then maybe they were going to have some reasonable grounds.
Yeah.
To just say no, it cannot be done so. And even the proposals that of the investment of millions of dollars or whatever in those things, I think the consultation was also not done properly.
Yeah, it wasn't.
And I don't know why. It could be that the political interference, the due influence of the American president was also at play.
Yeah, definitely.
So if that is how we think the institutions are governed, then we have a serious problem. We seriously have a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to do things differently. So when it comes to Africa and Namibia in particular, I don't know how far those governors who were actually given who were instructed to ensure that the construction of sports, feed, and all these other things are being implemented.
Yeah, I wish they would give us like a monthly update or something.
Yeah, maybe after we need also to have some time, perhaps to find out how far they are, what are the barriers.
Yeah, because after the groundbreaking announcement, we never hear from them again.
You see, maybe we need to hear more about it so that you see, because those, especially in the rural areas where we should have land almost ready available.
Yeah.
And I think the authorities in those jurisdictions are also at work to ensure the land is available and the young ones are mobilized. Because if all the regions are to do that, you can imagine the kind of jobs that they will create.
Yeah.
I think it will be also a massive one, permanent and casual one. So I think sports is just to be really managed especially when it comes to FIFA. No, not FIFA. The one of our body. Our body here that...
NFA?
NFA.
Yeah.
NF, Namibia Football Association, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I think he has witnessed a lot of confusion, especially when it comes to other code, like sport, I mean, boxing and all these things.
Yeah.
So you see that the children there who are also participating, they are learners. And those learners have to be requested from the school authority, the parents, and all these things. But you see some of the clubs, the way they are being always told, gather the people, and the people have to be at the field, at the waiting spot, for almost a day and a half. Imagine the children are just there, nothing to eat. Even the coach, or those who are administrators,
mm-hmm.
who are managing those clubs. So they are hardly get something, just something, to put in their pocket. If they get something, it will be after the event has taken place. But I'm sure that they are not getting proper attention.
Yeah.
I don't know when are we going to wake up and administer those events and those activities in a proper manner, in an orderly manner. So I think they need to shake up a bit so that we can see how we can... people, you know, they get interest in sports.
Yeah.
And sport is money, you know. You understand? So how do you promote and encourage those people on the grassroots to really put their effort and energy? They do that. But I think they don't receive much attention in terms of their upkeep, the children's upkeep, and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much for the chance you have given unto me.
Thank
so
you for
let
going.
Me hear more from you and see how we can improve.
Yes.
Sensitize our leaders and managers to put some, you know, good effort.
Yeah.
In sports.
100%.
Good.
Thank you for calling.
Welcome, sir.
Yes, the number in the studio is 0832 888 4001, and that's 0832 888 4001. The listener bringing up some good points there. So before his call came through, I was talking about the... Actually, let's rewind. Touch on what, on the one point he talked about, the stadiums. In the commercial break, I'm going to pull up both NDP6 and the manifesto implementation plan, the SOPO party manifesto implementation plan. Why? Because in those two documents, there's timelines regarding stadiums, regarding sports and everything. And I like to talk about them on here because no one else really does it. And it's important for us as we have these discussions to have them with key reference points in mind, right? So once we run through this, I'll pull up those documents during the next, during a musical break, and we will touch on exactly where things should be in terms of sport, and then we'll look at where they are in terms of sport development now in Namibia. But before we get to that, let's finish this FIFA story. So Mr. Infantino, you know, who used to be a UEFA darling, by the way, he was UEFA's man. He was, you know, he was supposed to come and help change the image of FIFA after it was, you know, tainted by Blatter and his crew, by Sir Blatter and his crew. That's how he was being presented to us in the footballing world. So he came up with this idea. He proposed to create something called the FFE, the FIFA FFE, which stands for the FIFA Forward Enterprise. right? And this FFE, this FIFA FFE, was going to act as a subsidiary of FIFA that would control the commercial interests of FIFA, right? Remember how we always talked about the league, about leagues being ran, being controlled, being administered by entities that are separate to the football associations. So the English Football Association doesn't run the English Premier League. You get my drift. Which isn't how it works in Namibia, but that's a story for another day. So he decided to create this FFE, which was going to act as a subsidiary of FIFA to control all of its commercial interests, its commercial enterprises. This includes now the FIFA's primary moneymaker, FIFA's most valuable asset, the most valuable sporting asset in the world, and that is the FIFA World Cup, right? Under this plan, FIFA was intending to sell up to 21% of equity in FIFA, or in the FFE rather, at a $20 billion US dollar evaluation. Which means that they were going to raise around 4.2 billion in cash if someone were to buy up this 21% stake. And reportedly, who they had lined up to make this investment was an investment group called Thrive Eternal. Why is it important for us to know this? This is because Thrive Eternal was co-founded by Joshua Kushner. Who is Joshua Kushner? He's the brother-in-law of Jared Kushner. Who is Jared Kushner? That's Donald Trump's son-in-law. And for those that don't know Donald Trump, U.S. president. And we've seen how Infantino has done everything he can, basically, to please or to put himself in the good graces of Donald Trump. Now, of course, this plan, you know, especially coming off this most expensive World Cup ever, one of the more politicized World Cups we've seen in recent history. You know, before the Qatar World Cup, there was a lot of talk about the politics of Qatar, the culture of Qatar, and so on. But this U.S. World Cup, it definitely superseded that. Even Russia, there was some, you know, talks of politics and so on. The 2026 World Cup 100% outdid that in terms of political drama, in terms of social drama, in terms of things that have nothing to do with the product that we see on the field. Even what the caller alluded to, the rescinding of Balogun's red card. That was purely political. I mean, when have we ever seen a president get involved in matters of what's happening on the field at a World Cup? We've never seen it. I mean, I'm even trying to remember if Putin even attended World Cup games in 2018. I can't remember. But if he did, it wasn't made such a spectacle the way Trump was. Putin definitely wasn't handing the winning team the trophy either. We didn't see that in Qatar. Brazil also not. 2010, I'm 99% sure, also not. And then Germany, of course, also not. So, it's been one of the more strange World Cups in that regard. When it comes to politics, when it comes to social unrest and all of those kind of things, with the fans that couldn't make it, the referees that weren't allowed to go in the country, all of that. So, for Infantino to then turn around after such a World Cup to say, you know what? What's best for world football is to sell a stake. Basically sell a stake of football to private equity. Which in US sports is a normal thing, has become a normal thing, but not for the beautiful game. Not for the game that we all know and love. that has, they're supposed to be the game of the people, you know. Private equity and so on, they're supposed to be kept out of football, at least to an extent. We see with the various team owners, how much money they're able to spend, how they're able to raise funds and so on through private equity and all that. That part is, it's a separate conversation, but it's already slowly creeping into football, and most people don't want to see it creep in at the level of FIFA. We've seen former players come out and say this is a bad idea. And then UEFA itself said if this plan were to follow through, they would boycott all FIFA competitions, including the World Cup. So meaning the next World Cup that's happening in Morocco, Spain, and Portugal, UEFA wouldn't be in it if this plan went through. And since then, obviously, the plan has been scrapped. Infantino said, said that the way it was put out in the media, they made mistakes with not communicating with the other member associations first and so on. And this is the statement that CAF came out to support and say that they support everything that, basically, that Infantino has going on. We'll get to some direct quotes in just a moment. But he said, or UEFA, rather, said in their protest when this was announced, they said that the soul and governance of football are not assets to trade, especially with zero transparency as to who gains financially. None of us are owners of football. It is not FIFA's to sell. This is what the UEFA said in a statement in protest to FIFA's ideas. And by the way, under this plan, you know, under all this money that FIFA is going to raise, like I said, $4 billion at pretty much in an instant in cash, they said that, FIFA said that under this plan, each of the 211 member associations would potentially see their funding increase from the current $8 million per year, $8 million US dollars per year, to $20 million or more for the 2027 to 2030, you know, World Cup cycle. And so CAF came out and said, when, you know, FIFA had to come out and apologize, basically saying that we're sorry that we angered everyone with our greed, basically. They came out and said, they released a statement, to unanimously endorse an update from FIFA regarding now this infamous FFE story. I can read you some quotes from this statement where FIFA said, or where CAF said, and remember, when you talk about CAF, we are talking about Dr. Patrice Motsepe, basically, because since he's the president. So usually, when CAF releases a statement, it's usually, you can take it as Motsepe is the one speaking. And so in the update, FIFA said, we acknowledge the mistakes were made in the process of the proposed establishment of the FIFA Forward Enterprise. It was certainly not the intention for the FIFA Council and FIFA member associations to feel excluded from the process, and it should have been handled differently. We sincerely apologize for these errors and commit to them not happening again. With this in mind, we will conduct a necessary review, and a report will be presented to the FIFA Council at its next scheduled meeting. Furthermore, as already known, the proposal, which would have been subject to the approval of the FIFA member associations and the FIFA Council, is now off the table. There are always lessons to be learned, and we will continue to improve our processes in light of this experience.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kg of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. And before the commercial break, we were talking about this the statement that CAF released to basically support FIFA in their backtracking of this now infamous FFE plan. And as I said, the CAF president, Mr. Patrice Motsepe, said that CAF welcomes and endorses the joint statement by FIFA president Gianni Infantino. CAF will continue to focus on making African football amongst the best in the world and is reaffirming its commitment to adhering to global governance, transparency, and auditing best practices. For us in Africa, adherence to governance, due process, and transparency is crucial and non-negotiable, as this is the practice and conduct we expect from our governments, businesses, and other institutions and organizations. This is also the conduct that is expected from CAF. We are committed to continuing working together with FIFA, its member associations, other football federations, and stakeholders to safeguard and adhere to governance, due process, transparency, and transparency, global best practices, and to continue and to contribute to the development and growth of football worldwide. Now, and then later in the statement, they also said the CAF executive committee also unanimously reconfirmed its support for FIFA President Gianni Infantino and thanked him for his support for African football over the years. Now, the reason this is something that I'm even bringing to air is because had this gone to a vote, you know, CAF actually has substantial voting power when it comes to these processes. You know, 54 member nations. So our voting power is significant, and by all accounts, we were going to support this plan. You know, I mean, in what world is the NFA going to turn down 20, or even some sites are saying, or some sources are saying, $40 million per year from FIFA? Why would they not agree to that, right? But now, whether or not this would have actually been beneficial to the global game remains to be seen. But we were not going to find out because it's been taken off the table. There's been too much backlash, too much negative press, and yeah, Infantino is going to have to find a different way to make more money, which I don't really understand how much more money this man needs FIFA to make. We just finished a record-breaking World Cup. So you're clearly already, in terms of revenue now I'm talking about, so you're clearly already doing well enough. Sometimes you can just go too far, Mr. Infantino. And I would be very, very surprised if, when he runs for election again, since this is only his first term, that he will be voted in again. Should he be voted in again? Some interesting times are ahead. Now let's continue with some more African sporting news. Staying in football, African football. It has been announced that the man himself, that is Pietso Mosimane, former Bafana Bafana coach, former Sundowns coach, staple of African football, really, when it comes to coaching and footballing excellence, that is Pietso Mosimane. It has been announced that he is back with Bafana Bafana. They have officially appointed him as the new head coach. He'll be taking over from Hugo Bruce, who, of course, made history by taking South Africa to the knockout stages of the 2026 FIFA World Cup. The first time that Bafana played in the knockout stages. And as you recall, they did unfortunately lose to Canada in the round of 32, that was, yes. So, Pietso will be... His first task is to make sure that South Africa qualify for the 2027... African Cup of Nations. That's taking place in East Africa, as we know. So let's see what Brother Pietso can do. And let's actually hear what they had to say about this appointment in...
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually... To put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%. Is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. We had a slight technical glitch, but we are back now on the Eagle Sports Zone. So, before that, I was trying to get us to listen to Pietso's coaching philosophy, in a sense. And he was actually kind of not campaigning, but he was very publicly stating. He was open with the fact that he wanted to be the next Bafana coach. Of course, he has coached them before, but he is back with them. And let's take a listen to what he has to say. Or how he views the game, really, is just all I want us to listen to.
And at the moment, what is your philosophy when it comes to the game? Yeah. If you were to create a five-a-side team, any player in history, how would you put it together?
In this episode, we will summarize.
Okay, never mind. But what we will listen to is one of the best post-match foot interviews. This was after the whole drama between Sundowns and Wydad Casablanca.
Commentary team, Tugal Timbazwane has given Mamelodi Sundowns their first victory in Group A of the CAF Champions League for this season. Coach Peter Mosimane is alongside me. Coach, your analysis of the game tonight.
Hey,
there's a lot of testing going on. It's been getting very, very, very aggressive between the two teams. One of the members of Wydad Casablanca has just been standing here to try and hear what Coach Pizzo is going to tell us, the media. So it's very, very heated here. People have been fighting all the way into the tunnel as well. It's okay, Coach. It's pretty much the atmosphere that's been throughout the second half of this game. Very testing. They were fighting with the ball boy. They were fighting going down the tunnel. But first, before we get to that, let's hear your analysis of the game.
Yeah, it's a Champions League game, man, with big emotions and all the things. They do this to us in Morocco. They do this. We go anywhere. Everybody bullies us. It's about time Sundowns come up and play Champions League. They do this to us. We don't find ball boys. They come to South Africa, they want to bully us? No, we have, even local, we know what to do. If people bully us, we give it back. Gone are the days.
Is that what you're also saying to your players going down the tunnel during the first half, saying, why don't you do this? Because it was that gamesmanship you were talking about pre-match.
No, the North Africans, they are always bullying everybody. Always. They bully referees, they bully everybody. They don't want to lose. They are going to lose tonight. We beat them fair and square. Two legitimate goals, they must go home. When we lose in Wydad, in Casa, we don't do anything. We walk out properly. What is all this? Wydad is used to winning and pushing and bullying the referees and bullying everybody. Not in Atresville.
Yes, that is the new Bafana Bafana coach. Like I said, he has coached him before he was first an assistant at the 2020 World Cup, and then he took over after the World Cup, and then he was coached until 2012, and then obviously since then he was Sundowns coach. He's gone and coached on the continent. So he's a well-decorated man, and that interview still is one of my favorite post-match interviews, and it kind of is a good transition into what I want to talk about for the next portion of the show, and that is this idea of Pan-Africanism in sport, the relationship between Pan-Africanism and sport. So first, I think it's important that we discuss what is Pan-Africanism, right? What is this idea of Pan-Africanism? And why do I want to bring it up in a sporting context? Does it even fit in the sporting context? And so, to give us a definition of Pan-Africanism, I want us to listen to a short excerpt, a short speech. This is a TED Talk by Thomas Wakiaga. We'll listen to a few minutes from that to get an idea of Pan-Africanism.
And support. Good morning. I'm here to talk to you about something that is near and dear to my heart.
And he was 18 when he made this speech. Eagle FM, a good evening.
Oh, sorry. Were there some chaotic kind of situation there?
No. That's the old speech from like 5-6 years ago when Sundowns was playing against Wydad.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not a new one. I just wanted to bring back his speech too.
Yeah, but you still experience some of those things then, see, in many quarters.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what was happening at AFCON in Morocco.
You see now, can you see all those things? These are actually some kind of indiscipline.
Yeah.
And sometimes it starts with the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And also, because the players to
gets to that level and all these things, sometimes it's really, they might discover some kind of unfairness and mistreatment. Like when they say, no, this one, they're always bullying us and things like that. So those things, especially when it comes to South African team, even among themselves, I was listening and watching their documentary, how they are now trying to put some kind of security in place.
Yeah.
And those players and the spectators, all those ones, they just fought their way in the football pitch, and then they, with no regards to the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we seriously need to shut up in terms of really disciplining ourselves and our players, and also to make the supporters understand that this sport is things that should be able to unite us, not to divide us. And whether you lose or not, you are not to take the law into your hand, into your hand.
Yeah.
I think we just need to make sure that we manage some of these things properly.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, especially in Namibia,
yeah,
even though we also see those kind of incidents there, but it's easy to deal with because of the size of our population.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be easy to manage some of those conflict or confrontation and things like that if they happen.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just be making sure that we educate ourselves and our players and supporters.
Mm-hmm.
That both things are not good for, you know, for sports. If you want sport to progress.
100%.
So thank you very much. Yeah?
Thank you.
Good.
Yes, the number this year is 0832-888-401. That's 0832-888-401 if you'd like to chime in with any questions, comments, concerns. But now I want us to listen to when he made this speech, this presentation. This young man was 18 years old, and his name is Thomas Wakiaga. Thomas Wakiaga. He is from a... where's Thomas from? Okay, we'll get information on Thomas in just a moment. But what he... Today, I know he is a... He's a co-founder of something called the Global Students Council. And at the time was a one of the youngest TED Talkers actually in the history of TED Talk. All right, let's take a listen to what he had to say.
And what is this something I speak of? Pan-Africanism, of course. What is Pan-Africanism, you may ask? I would like to define it for what I think it really is. That being an ideology that asserts and supports the solidarity of Africans worldwide. It stresses on the fact that our unity as Africans, not just within the continent, but as well as the diaspora, is a vital part of our economic, social, and political progress in terms of the continent's survival. You see, I don't know about you, but I grew up believing that anywhere but Africa was heaven. I thought that being African was one of the worst things that could happen to you in life. And who could blame me? Look at the prevalence of tribalism, imperialism, and corruption within our continent. Now, let me give you a few scenarios that happened within our own country and other countries around the continent. Who would want to grow up living in a country where your leaders are wanted by the ICC? Who would entrust their livelihood to those who use public funds as their personal bank account? And would you want to live in a country that is still ruled by the primitive, divide and conquer ideas left to us by the colonialists? I think that is going backwards. And Africa is rising and meant to be moving forward. Before discovering what Pan-Africanism was, I would have told you that anyone who wanted to live in these conditions is crazy. However, now, as a Pan-Africanist, I tell you that I relish the opportunity and the chance to live in any one of these hellholes within the continent. You see, I understand and accept the challenge of uniting Africans and making it the next big thing, not only as a Pan-Africanist, but as a youth as well. If we had a standard of leadership where we were able to hold our leaders accountable for their scandals, iniquities, and irresponsibilities, we would then move forward. From this, I have a question to ask you. Imagine what Africa would be if Africans loved Africa as much as the rest of the world loved its resources. We would not rely on the aid of foreign entities. We would not be the beggars of the world. We would be a force to reckon with. We wouldn't look over at Zimbabwe and Uganda and say, if they can do that, so should we. No. Instead, we would be our brother's keepers. Or there's famine in Ethiopia. We've got some maize right here in Kenya. Why don't you have some? You need some election monitors in Zambia. We've got some right here in Namibia. Why don't you use them for your upcoming election? I wonder, did you guys hear that Rwanda has that new and swift program that enables people to clean the streets? I wonder how that would fare on in Nairobi, Kenya right now. You see, what I'm here to tell you today is that we do not need aid from countries who are only here to feed on our resources and complain about the heat. Now, with that statement being said, I don't want people to believe that I'm here, for lack of a better word, to take a dump on foreign relations between African countries and countries outside of this great continent that we live in today. What I am here to say is that if we started to look within ourselves for ideas, innovations, and ways to push forward the continent, wouldn't we have solutions that the rest of the world is looking for? Pan-Africanism begins by teaching us some of the amazing things that our ancestors have done. It begins by teaching us that Africa is not a wasteland like we are led to believe it is. It teaches us of our ancestors, such as Tom Mboya, Kwame Nkrumah, Thomas Sankara. It teaches us of the amazing things that these Pan-Africanist pioneers, if you will, have done. It teaches us of the great things that we continue to do. Pan-Africanism is all about solidarity and unity. It is the idea of the Queen Zinga of Angola. It is the idea of the Ashanti in Ghana. It is the idea of the Zulu of South Africa. It is the idea of the pyramids in Egypt and Sudan. It is the idea of M-Pesa in Kenya, all compiled and converging into one thing, and that thing, of course, being Pan-Africanism. Now, let's talk about the media for a second. Though the media does play a vital role in our lives, some would say that they virtually perpetuate some of the heavy stereotypes that are thought about Africans today. Don't get me wrong, politicians do play a major role in why Africa is seen as what it is today. Now, by a show of hands here, how many people have traveled to another country and been asked some ridiculous question because of being African or having African descent? Believe me, I know the feeling as well. You see, as an African, I want to tell you the cold, hard truth that tribalism is our only authentic identity. Take, for example, the 2007 post-election violence that arose in Kenya because of corruption and tribalism. A study conducted by Stephen Keveridge in 2008 showed that 58% of Kenyans didn't even know that their parties had a manifesto. Now, is that to say that we as Kenyans cast our votes primarily because of the candidate's charisma? Was it the candidate's wealth? Was it the candidate's looks? No. It was because we have been conditioned to think that we have to make a choice based on ethnicity. I'm not here to say that you shouldn't be proud of your tribe, your culture, or your history. But what I am here to say is Pan-Africanism teaches us about solidarity. It teaches us about unity. It teaches us about patriotism. Let me give you a little history here about imperialism. You see, imperialism was Africa's and Asia's three-century-long fight for foreign dominance. It was dependent on dismantling national unity and replacing it with ethnic intolerance, which is what we see today. The scars of this are felt now more than ever, with phrases such as, I am Yoruba, or I am Shona, or I am Kikuyu, or I am Luo, or I am a Luya, becoming more and more insufferable each and every day. Like I said, I am not here to say that you should not be proud of your culture, your history, or where you are from. In fact, Pan-Africanism encourages exactly that. You should be proud. You should be happy. But what I am saying is, when a candidate or a person's main selling point is his ethnicity rather than his core values, his principles as a man, won't that person have a tendency towards an abuse of power or corruption? What I am here to tell you today is we can do this without the divide and conquer. We can do this without ethnic barriers. We can do this without ethnic intolerance. We can do this without hate speech. Patriotism has no party. Patriotism sees no gender. Patriotism sees no race. Patriotism sees no tribe. What I am saying today, ladies and gentlemen, is you should stick to one political party. You should be proud of where you're from. But what I am saying is that we can do this without the divide and conquer, and we can do this the right way. We can do this the Pan-African way. Thank you.
That was young Thomas giving some context into what Pan-Africanism is, what the idea represents, what it should mean. And you know, to summarize what he said, you know, or the sentiment of Pan-Africanism really is the idea that we are all one, essentially, on the continent, all 54, 55. Nations on the continent all have one broad, unified, common interest, right? Or interests with the S, multiple. And one key question that he asked is, why don't we love Africa as much as the outside world loves Africa? That's an important question that fits across a wide array of things, but something that fits with sport as well. You know, lately I've been thinking a lot about African sport. I've been thinking a lot about really the main motivators of this is from the World Cup, right? You know, we saw how historic it was for the continent of Africa. The World Cup didn't end as nice as we wanted it to end, but Up until the first round of knockout stages, it was euphoria, really, if you were an African at the World Cup. And if you had this idea of Pan-Africanism, this idea of Ubuntu, you felt a sense of pride that even me, as a sports enthusiast, I haven't felt about African sport in a long time. And I'm slowly unlearning, but even me, myself, I'm a problem of what it is that I'm discussing today is, as Africans, truly speaking, on a grand scale, we don't love African sports as much as we like to, to posture and pretend that we do, truthfully speaking. You know, the average sports fan on the continent, I can confidently say, is a fan of outside sport before they are a fan of whether it's their local sport or continental sport. You know, and that's obviously not to paint everyone with the same broad brush. Of course, we have fans, we have local sports fans on the continent, but not to the numbers that they should be. No, when I look at it, and there's a few countries where it is true that they support their local sports. I mean, obviously, we know South Africa. We know Tanzania. I just explained what their media rights deal looks like. It wouldn't look like that if the Tanzanians weren't watching Tanzanian football. And I'm also willing to, I'm inclined to say Tanzanian football is a big thing on the, in that block of Africa, that East African block of, you know, of your Uganda, your Rwandas, your Kenya. I get the sense that they all tune into Tanzanian football the same way us here in SADC. Instead of we tune into the PSL. No, we don't even have to talk about North African football. But as Africans, what is it going to take for us on average to view African sport, to treat African sport, to spend on African sport the way we spend on outside sports? You know, and I think of here in the local context, whenever we host, for example, football matches, which the league, they did say they are starting this month, I haven't been informed of any sponsor of the league coming on, so I would be interested to hear exactly how this league is going to be funded. But also, that's another story for another day. But often the argument is that if you host matches at the Independence Stadium, Dayton Olympia, when you ask, you know, why do you think the stadium is so empty? Why is no one coming to this? Even matches that, you know, you would think are big matches, no one is coming. They'll say, oh no, it's cause it's far from everyone. People don't want to pay the taxi money and then pay at the gate again and then pay for food and drinks when they get there, which fair enough. I mean, it's a valid argument. But my counter to that argument, if I were to play devil's advocate, is if, you remember how, European teams used, and I guess they still do in pockets, but European teams used to come to Africa a lot, especially South Africa, for preseason. Now, they mainly go to Asia and the United States and stay in Europe. But when they did used to come to South Africa, you know, the stadiums were packed, of course. No, biggest teams in the world, you want to see them. But my counter argument to the whole thing of, if we're taking football now, that is too far for people to come and support and so on, is if it was announced, let's say this coming weekend, it was announced that African Stars is playing against, say, Tigers at Independence Stadium. You get your regular 200 or so African Stars fans that go basically to every match. You get your dozens of Tigers fans. All in all, you're not looking at more than 500 people even at Independence Stadium is what I'm trying to say. And that's even on a good day, right? If the very next day, so let's say today's Monday and it was announced that Saturday, there's Tigers against African Stars at the Independence Stadium. This was announced Monday morning. That same Monday, if it was announced at, let's say, 5 o'clock, that same Monday, five in the afternoon, that Sunday, the very following day after the African Stars Tigers match, that, Man United will be there, not even playing against anyone, just training. Man United will be there training at the Independence Stadium on Sunday. I'm willing to bet my everything that I own to my name that same stadium that couldn't be filled the day before would be filled to the rafters, to the point where people are trying to break in to get into the stadium. Right? And that's it's a psychological thing. And we've spoken about the psychological continuum model on here about why it is that way. But, you know, lately I've been thinking, you know, I just explained about young African in Tanzania, how dominant they've been in their league, how one of the greatest, one of, if not the greatest Namibian player is now signing for that team. And I can truthfully say, I can honestly say, I've never watched a young African soccer match, football match. I haven't seen them play ever. In fact, when Shalulile signed for them is the first time I even saw their logo. But this is a massive team on the continent, right? And I have little to no clue about them. No, prior to Shalulile signing, I had no desire to look out for them, to find out about them, to support them in any way, shape or form, even though they're one of the giants of African club football. Right? In theory, I should already have a Shalulile young African shirt. And I don't even have a Shalulile Sundown shirt, which is where he quite literally made history. I don't have that. And I never, now that I'm sitting here, I never even thought to do that. And I know I'm not the only one who hasn't done this. In fact, now that I'm thinking about it, I've actually never seen a Shalulile Sundown shirt in Namibia. If anyone has seen one, call in. If you have one, call in 0832888401. This is part of the broader conversation that I'm trying to bring here about Pan-Africanism and sports, is that as Africans, we should be more proud about our sports. We should be more enthusiastic about our sports. We shouldn't look down on our sports. Now, on the other side of that, on the other side of that coin, someone would say, you know, these organizations haven't given me reason to be as enthusiastic as I am about them, as I am with, you know, Manchester United, as I am with Chelsea, as I am with Real Madrid, and so on. Eagle FM, good evening.
Yeah, I think I only saw one.
Shalulile shirt.
No. That one is just I think it's for their club, former club. So the one that's written Umbundu.
Okay.
Yeah, that one I've seen only a lady who is always, who used to put stone. In the Shakati, in the, she's working in one of this Lamil group.
Yeah.
So, and no, even when we were looking for those, when South Africa was playing in the World Cup there, we were looking for their T-shirt and all these things, but we couldn't get them.
Yeah.
All over. And then we were asking David at Eagle here, say we were really looking for them. And so you can see now that that Pan-African spirit that the presenter I was talking about, it's lacking within us. We don't support other countries. We don't do that. So I think we just need to change.
Yeah, no, I fully agree.
Okay, so please let's see how we can mobilize each other more, better. And the people should be able to live. That's why you see all those tribalisms and all these things, nationalists or whatever you call them. It's not a good thing, actually.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, man.
Thank you for calling.
I'm enjoying your program.
Thank you.
Good.
Yes, like the caller said, during the World Cup. Although I'm not sure how we couldn't find South Africa shirts, because those were, you know, the South African shops. But when the World Cup started, I was talking about why can't I buy a DRC shirt in Namibia? As an African, I was confused as to why I couldn't do that. Why couldn't I buy a Cape Verde shirt? Why couldn't I buy a Morocco shirt, an Ivory Coast shirt, a Senegal shirt? I couldn't buy in Namibia. And as we heard from the other African correspondents that had joined me on the show that day. It's similar in their nations as well. And at the end of the day, we can't buy them because the people selling these shirts know that you guys aren't going to buy them if we made them available. You aren't going to buy them. You want to buy a Brazil shirt. You want to buy a France shirt. You want to buy a Germany shirt. You want to buy a Spain shirt. You want to buy an England shirt. But you don't want to buy a DRC shirt, even though DRC is your neighbor, right? So in the conversation of sports development, in the conversations of sport as a business, in the conversation of sport as a revenue driver on the continent, I want to add the psychological element to that. Not only do we need physical development, you know, of our facilities, of our certain youth structures and so on, you know, that's well spoken about. That's common knowledge at this point. You know, it's a song that we've heard millions of times. It's a song that we hear every, when it's time for elections, everyone knows what's wrong with sports and what needs to be fixed with sports, right? But what I want to add to that conversation is the mental part, the psychological part. What exactly is it that prevents us from watching or supporting our sports, our local sports, whether it's local football, whether it's local rugby, whether it's local cricket, whatever it may be. Whichever sport you have in your country, there's probably at least an 80% chance. No, this is now not backed by any research. I'm just thinking intuitively. If you're a fan of sport and that sport exists in your country, more than likely you are a bigger fan of that sport when it comes to the participants and teams being from outside your country, outside your continent. The biggest example of that is football. So, I want us to listen to this conversation that was had on the Popular Side podcast. This is a podcast between two I believe they're Nigerians. But they spoke on this. So let's take a listen to what they had to say.
To answer this question for me. Okay. So my friend is American with an African parent. One African parent, one American parent. But born and raised all his life in America.
Okay.
And my friend does not understand why during the World Cup, I was supporting Morocco and not France, because France was full of black players, right? So in my life, I'm Pan-African, and I interpret Pan-Africanism to mean I support all of Africa, but I also support all of black people in the diaspora, right?
Yeah.
So it seemed like supporting Morocco, which... sometimes, you know how some of our Arab neighbors treat some sub-Saharan, I don't use that term, but let's use it for the sake of argument, sub-Saharan Africans sometimes, lots of racism, lots of discrimination, mm-hmm. not good.
Mm-hmm.
And why wouldn't I support the black players on the French team, as an example, even if I'm not a big supporter of the French team, because of all their shenanigans in Africa? In the past, until this day. So, no matter what I say, it's not going to be good enough, right? So, I want you, okay, a neutral party to explain, because I try to explain, I'm like, in 1990, it was Cameroon. Every African supported Cameroon because they were doing something at the World Cup, right?
Absolutely.
And... In 1994, it was Nigeria. In 1998, it was Nigeria. In 2002, It was Senegal. In 2006, it was Ghana. In 2010, it was Ghana again. In 2014, it was nobody. Nobody did well. In 2018, in Russia, did any African team do well? Yeah, Nigeria. Nigeria wasn't good, but we made the knockout round, but we were terrible. Yeah, we won one game. And then in 2022, it was Morocco. They were going all the way to the semis, right? I mean, they were doing something no one had ever done before, right? And it's funny because everywhere I go, if I have my Yekini jersey on, if I have my Okocha jersey on, Africans of all shades come to me and want to talk to me about it. And when it comes to football, our North African brothers don't discriminate between North and East and South and West. It's the only thing that really unites Africans.
Absolutely.
So am I being naive about this? Or do you agree with this? You know,
why would you support France to start with? Because they have black players? I don't understand.
Because they have black players. We're supporting them. So his sense is these players were born in France. Not all of them, but let's go with it. Most of them were born in France. Some were not. Mm-hmm. And that's the only country they legitimately know. It's kind of like black Americans playing basketball for America. You know, I think it's a little different because these African players, these France players have African parents. So it's a little different. You know, we're not yet at that place where they've been in France for three or four generations. Most of them are first generation themselves, or their parents were first generation.
Okay. So, to your friend, for this purpose of this discussion, I'll say Mr. X, right?
okay, let's go with Mr.
Aki,
X.
Aki is not the odd man out in this case, right? This is the way most of we Africans, we feel about this, right? Mm-hmm. When we're playing the World Cup, see, when we're playing the Nations Cup, yes, there is that division. Yes, we can be fighting each other. But when we go to the World Cup, we have countries that are representing Africa. We have countries that will determine the number of births we get in the future. If we succeed, the more seeds will most likely come to us. If we mess up, we won't get more seeds. We'll probably get less. So at the World Cup, I am rooting for every African nation. Every. France winning or losing has nothing to do with Africa. It doesn't benefit me in any way. It doesn't hurt me in any way. So why will I then support them? It doesn't in any way. So I will not, you know, I can like the players and I can say, oh, you know, but if a French team is playing an African team, even if it is North Africa, South Africa, East Africa, of course I'm supporting the African team. Why would I support the French team? No way will I do that. You know? So it's understandable. Yeah. These guys are French. Yeah. Mm. The fact that they have decided to play for France, Aki and I have a problem with that to start with, but we're not even going to go into that. But the fact that you've decided to play for France, right, that means you're French. If you win, it's the glory of France. It's not the glory of Africa, right? Mm. When they won the World Cup, Pogba is it Senegal or Mali? Who else?
Mali.
Mbappe is from Cameroon. Did you think any glory
Cameroon
came to
and
Cameroon
Algeria.
Or Mali? Yep. Yeah. Did you think any glory came to those countries because they won? No. None whatsoever. Yeah. So it's not unusual. What Akin said is not unusual. It is what it is. Akin.
Okay. Let me twist the hypothetical a little bit, right? So Yinka, what about the real issue here? You know, my friend is a very conscious person, you know, and he understands when something happens to black people in one part of the world, it affects all of us around the world. So in that way, he's also Pan-African, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the fact that these North African countries, you know, sometimes act as agents of Europe in stopping, again, I hate the term sub-Saharan, but in stopping sub-Saharan African from crossing through the Sahara Desert, through their countries, into the Spains and Frances and Italy's of the world. And sometimes they just plain do ugly things to, again, quote unquote, Black Africa. And then what about the Sudan versus South Sudan, Sudan versus other regions in Sudan that are not all the way Arab, and all those things that are happening in the last 20, 25 years. And, you know, those are real as well. So how do you, feel being Nigerian and rooting for those countries?
How can we say this, right?
Yeah.
I don't like bringing sports into politics and vice versa.
Or politics into sports. Yep.
Yeah. It's not something I love to do, right? So when it comes to sports, let's keep it within that silo of sports, right?
Okay.
We are Africans when it comes to sports. I support the Moroccans, I support the Tunisians, and I don't want to go into, because if we open that can of worms on a political standpoint, you're going down a rabbit's hole at this point. Only God knows where we will end. We might not even finish this podcast in the next 1 hour, right? One other thing I would love your friend to notice is this. Even the French guys that have picked our boys, or the African boys, it's when they win, they remember they are French. When they mess up, they remember that they are Cameroonians, they are Malians, they are Guineans, or Algerians, or, you know, whatever, as the case may be. Okay? Saka, Rashford, you saw what happened to them. You see what happens to them on the daily. So why would I be rooting for those kind of people that are selective in their support of my people, quote and unquote? I won't do that.
Yeah.
You know? It's not it.
Not to make this even more complicated. And I'm sorry, I just had to do this. So my apologies. Mm. But I think we're gonna cut this up So Nigeria, for example, a lot of people who are not Nigerian don't know this. Nigeria has a pretty sizable Lebanese community, right?
Absolutely.
And they've come in two waves. You know, they came in the 80s when you had the Lebanese civil war. It was, you know, pretty brutal. There's a lot of reasons why that happened that we're not going to get into it. And Nigeria was one of the places that a lot of Lebanese came into. And, you know, they're well established. They're in many cases uber successful. You know some of the really, really popular Lebanese origin Nigerian. They at this point they consider themselves Nigerian, right?
So they even have Nigerian passports.
Now there's been they have Nigerian passport, they consider themselves Nigerians. And now there's been a second wave, unfortunately. No one wants to see this as Lebanon continues to suffer from a lot of geopolitical issues. Now there's a second wave, and this time it's not just Nigeria. You know, it's pretty much every West African capital. You know, you go to Abidjan, you know, there's a wave there. You know, Accra, there's a wave there. So, and I say that, I say Lebanon on purpose because I know they're not African, right? They're not from Africa, you know, but Africa is very welcoming. You know what I mean? Like I used to know this number. I can't remember how much. I think it's something like 6,000 foreign people coming to Lagos either every week or every month. I can't remember. We don't think about it. We don't talk about it. But there's a lot of people around Africa that find Lagos as a land of opportunity and come in all the time. We don't talk about that. We talk about Nigerians leaving Nigeria, but we don't talk about people coming into Nigeria. I say all that to say, you know, immigrants going into North Africa from Southern Africa is not anything new. It happens all the time. You know, the wave comes from the other way as well. I have a really good friend who is Egyptian, born and raised in Nigeria. You know, family still in Nigeria. There's, I have many, you know, people like that as well.
Yeah.
I think for people who have not lived in Africa, you know, it's not the part of Africa that you see in the news. It's not, people don't do in-depth stories about Africa outside of the typical, you know, the gloom and doom and all that. So that may be the context that may be missing here. So just wanted to put that out there.
Fair enough. But hey, we're Africans when it comes to sports. We are Africans. I'll say it again. If you remove sports, we might not be Africans anymore, if you get what I mean. But
yeah.
Sporting context? Oh, nah. Anyway, let's
wrap up this segment by tell the people what Lagos was like during Morocco's run at the 2022 World Cup. Was there even a doubt who people were going to support?
Hell, there was no doubt at all. All the viewing centers, everybody was rooting for Morocco. Yeah? Everybody was rooting for Morocco. Same thing with Ghana. When Luis Suarez did what he did to Ghana, I was pissed.
He did it to all of Africa.
He did it to all of Africa.
And then the crazy thing, if we're going by what people actually look like, meaning the color of people's skin, we know the history of North Africa and the Middle East, and how a lot of people who live there today were originally from what is now considered sub-Saharan Africa. And a lot of people that make it onto these national teams look like you and I, you know what I mean? They may no longer have our names. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They all have Arabic sounding names. And then I guess I keep saying we're wrapping it up, but I keep going. If you think about, Morocco is actually the least Arabic of the North African teams. You know what I mean? They're the least indigenous, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Because Arabic may be the most widely.
Egypt.
Yeah. So because they're all the way to the West, right? All the way to the West, as far from the Middle East as you could get. And if you think about language, it's probably the North African country where Arabic is the least spoken, if that makes sense, because there's still a heavy Berber population and Berber influence and all that. And Moroccan Arabic is not considered standard Arabic. It's not considered well-spoken Arabic, if that makes sense. Okay, we've done this thing to death. Thank you for indulging. Thank you for watching our video. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Click on the notifications button so you don't miss any of our content.
And please don't forget to follow us on all our social media platforms.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is all the time we have for today on the Eagle Sports Zone. Make sure you stay tuned into your number one talk radio station. We'll be back at the same time, at the same place next week, Sunday, here on the Eagle Sports Zone. Make sure you're tuned in for the Matriarch coming up next, Tati Matias coming up after that, and then Tati France coming with Unpacking the Day tomorrow from 6 to 9 a.m. Don't forget the Villager newspaper will be published tomorrow morning. So if you haven't already, make sure you are a subscriber to that publication for the latest and greatest in business, economics, trade, agriculture, policy developments, and all things economic development related. Ladies and gentlemen, have a blessed Sunday evening, and I'll see you next Sunday on the Eagle Sports Zone.